Hello, and welcome to another Mike M's Weekly Reads. And man, I have so many comics, I don't even know I could talk about some of the back issues I've got. A lot came in. I got these from Aaron Myers, and I bought a lot of Unexpected in GI Combat from the comic shop. And well, not a lot, but like 10 issues. I got the first Sergeant Rock GI Combat crossover. I got a House of Mystery. I'm trying to get all the DC comics, and even though I hated the movie, I got Little Shop of Horrors number one. I could see the appeal to it, but I think you have to like musicals. Like I've never have sat down and enjoyed a musical. I got ALF number 50, which is the last issue. Amazing Spider-Man 202, 241, 275. Astonishing Tales number 2, 3 featuring Kazar and Doctor Doom, and number 30 featuring Deathlok the Demolisher. There's a couple of Blade series I was missing. I was missing Strange Tales, Blade. This is issue number one by McGregor and Hagen. And this is another Blade number one from Golden and Colon. Jean, probably. And then I got a Captain America 279. I am very close. I am like 6 issues away from completing Captain America. It's pretty impressive. Captain Marvel, number 20, volume 1. Captain Marvel 62, and this is one of those ones with the weird price tag that are exclusive to like almost like New York distribution. We have Fantastic Four 118, and Crystal's turned against the FF. And Lockjaw is taking on the Thing, and it looks like Mr. Fantastic is got his arm caught in Lockjaw's mouth. Got an Amanda Connor cover on Gargoyles. I don't know much about this, but it's based on the cartoon, and it looked really cool, and it'll probably lead me down a rabbit hole to collect Gargoyles. We have Ghost Rider 2099. I'm trying to complete all the 2099, and this is issue 25. We have Giant Size Fantastic Four number 2, Giant Size Avengers number 5, Giant Size Hulk number 1. One of the titles I'm looking to complete too is Iron Man, and this is issue 116. The Murder Machines of Madame Mask. And he's lifting like a tank with Madame Mask in it. I also got issue 117, where he's fighting the Spy Master. And I like the title because I wonder if it's a takeoff of The Spy Who Loved Me. It's called The Spy Who Killed Me. You know, James Bond. Kazar number 1, the 25-cent issue. Man-Thing number 7. I'm working to complete my Gerber issues. Like I only have one more issue. I've done Defenders the entire run. I only have one more issue of Howard the Duck to go, and this is the first Man-Thing series that I need to complete. I'm starting to work on that. I started with Adventures into Fear, starring the Man-Thing, and now I'm working on Man-Thing. And picked up the second volume of Man-Thing. This is the number one of the second volume. This came up as a joke on Twitter. Andrew Peepoy is doing a cover to Doctor Who, and Joe said, Mike won't get it. He doesn't like Doctor Who. Well, I did get a Doctor Who issue just to complete Marvel Premiere. I only need one more Marvel Premiere to go, and it's another Doctor Who issue. It's one of those things that if it pops up and I want to complete the run, I'll get it, but I probably won't read it. I'm not a fan of Doctor Who. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man 116, where he's fighting 75-cent issue, where he's fighting, he's got his black costume and he's fighting Sabretooth on the cover. This one's actually a cover on one of the Epic collections, a Spectacular Spider-Man 158, and it's Spidey Goes Cosmic. It's an act of vengeance in here, and it's how the strongest hero. Now he's the strongest hero in the Marvel Universe. I got the Powder Toast Man special number one from Ren and Stimpy. Strange Tales number 183. It's a 25-cent issue. Doctor Strange and Baron Mordo. I like the cover a lot. Doctor Strange 185. Clea's on the cover, and they're fighting the Mindless Ones and Dormammu. We got Submariner number 25. Really close to completing my Submariner issues. Not including Tales of Suspense, but just Submariner, Namor, that kind of thing. And I think I got about 7 more issues to go. We got, speaking of Tales to Astonish, a Submariner Hulk number 74 with Submariner on the cover and the Hulk. We have Thor 170, Volume 1, 15-cent issue, Invasion from the Thermal Man, Uncanny Tales from the Grave, number 6, War is Hell, number 12, War is Hell, number 14, War is Hell, number 15. We got this one I don't own any of, but it's from Adventure Comics. I think it's from Malibu, their adventure line, I think. And it's got a very sexy cover of a woman getting, like, looks like blood transfusions through those robotic hands, and she's naked. It's issue number 2. It's called Deathhawk number 2. I wonder if it's black and white. I would imagine so, and I think when I looked it up in my database, it was only 4 issues. But I'm going to pop it open. I haven't looked at it yet. And just to see. Really nice cover. Yeah, it's in black and white. Oh, the interiors are very nice. Wonder if it's a continuation thing or if it's like an anthology. Adventure Publications. So it's like its own comic publishing. They had Elf Warrior, The Adventures, Ninja Elite, and Warriors. I don't know much about them. This is probably my first adventure comic. Not DC's adventure comic, but from the adventure publishing chain. We have Ant number 3, volume 1 from Arcana. We have Betty and Me, number 53. I've been trying to get a lot of... I have been on an Archie kick. This one, I don't even know what it is. Aaron posted it. It says adults only. It's 50 cents. It's called Swamp Fever by Big Muddy Comics New Orleans. From the Charlton group, got a nice set of Charlton comics from Aaron. I got Battlefield Action, number 89. It's 75 cents. I got Atomic Mouse, number 1. Funny Animals, number 1. Funny Animals, number 2. Fighting Marines, number 169. It gives you an appreciation how Charlton was really around for a really long time. Ghost Manor number 76, Ghost Manor number 77, Ghostly Tales 139, Gunfighters from Charlton number 78, Baron Werewolf's Haunted Library number 68. I think the title itself from Charlton is called Haunted. It's not doesn't have the full title, I think. We got Secret Romance number 42, Secret Warmance number 46. From Dark Horse Comics, we got Godzilla, King of the Monsters number 1 special. This publisher, I don't know, not sure. I know, but I know it's Neil Vokes, and it's Eagle number 6 from I can't even read this. The Crystal Comics. It is written really weird. Are you enjoying your bone there, Harley? Are you enjoying it, girl? From Dell Comics, I got Jungle War Stories. I couldn't tell you the number because it's a funky number without opening it up. Anything Goes actually has the turtles on it from Fantagraphics. You'll say, what did he get a cyber frog for? Well, I needed to experience it. I'm working on the Harris collection of Cyber Frog, written by the controversial, who I don't agree with one bit whatsoever, but I want to read the comics, are Cyber Frog number 1 and Cyber Frog number 4. This isn't the original one. This is the Harris run. We got Tech Jacket from Image Comics, number 2. I think this is the second volume. 2, 4, 5, 6. And then, this one I was excited to pick up. From Innovation, Psycho 1 through 3, Alfred Hitchcock. From Last Gasp Publishing, Adults Only, a $2 comic. This cover looks awful. I don't like it at all. It's a bunch of dog bodies with people heads. And it says, it's a dog's life. Why are these dog men? Shocking answers inside. And from Oni, Whiteout by Greg Rucka and Lieber, which they made a movie of. So I did have that in trade already, but not the single issues. So that was some of the books I've recently acquired. There's more than that. I'm not going to go into the comic shop stuff, but I've picked up quite a few Archies, just random Archies from there. One was from Spire, which is that Christian publishing group, which I was excited to get because I don't have any Archies that were published from that Spire group, and now I do. So that gets me through that. And the next bit, we will get into the weekly reads if I can find out where I left off. So, we haven't done one of these in a while, but we got to get rocking, man, so I don't fall super behind. All right. From August 5th, 2019 to August 11th, 2019, the ratings are 5, I love it, 4, I really like it, 3, I like it, 2, I did not like it, 1, I hated it. Stole from the original Amazon. I used to like these because there's no ambiguity on where you are in terms of liking it. For the movies that I watched that week, the 4 out of 5s were Overboard. That was not the original Overboard, but the remake Overboard, where they switched the roles. The woman was the one that took the rich man who forgot had amnesia, and made him her husband. And it was pretty good. I saw it on the free preview week of Epics, where they're showing Pennyworth. And the 4 out of 5 was The Kitchen. That one I actually went to the theater for. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think I like the comic book more. Sometimes I'll watch a movie and the movie's better than the comic book. At least I think so, or the TV show. And then this case, I think the comic book was better than the movie, but it's still, I really liked it at 4 out of 5. And then at a 5 out of 5 was Kick-Ass. It was my third time watching it. I just think that movie's really fun. I have a lot of fun with it. There were a total of 22 comics that week, 5 Zenoscope, 5 Marvel, 2 Image, five DC, one American mythology, one Ahoy, and three Aftershock. So let's start at the ones I just liked. We have Grim Fairy Tales 78 through 80. This is volume one. Cella deals with her solitary confinement in jail. She gets out and finds weird zombie-like incidents and finds Snyder, who she shivved, is alive and well. They form an easy un uneasy alliance to fight these zombie prisoners. Later, she gets a visit from her daughter, who is calling her Mother Venus, and that's Cella's daughter. Somehow Venus has manipulated Cella's daughter to say that she's the mother, and now she's in prison. And then all hell breaks loose at the prison, with everyone, including the princess, turning to evil zombie-like creatures. Cella has to team up with the warden and Spider. And then we have a 3 out of 5, Absolute Carnage number one. I'm kind of like mixed bag on the Absolute Carnage. Like, I'm enjoying it, but I think there's some of the tie-ins I'm liking more than the real one, which is really weird. But the concept of Absolute Carnage is Carnage is now attacking the Earth, and anybody who's had a symbiote attached to him, because they left back like something like called a codex in their body, and he's trying to get that so he can raise their god. I can't remember what the god's name is, but maybe I wrote it down. I probably didn't. But in this comic, Eddie is trying to protect his son, where he's hunted down by Carnage, who's trying to kill, or we think, people who have a symbiote or have had a symbiote. Thunderbolt Ross, members of the Foundation, and others. The symbiote saves Eddie when he is about to get killed. So that's Venom's symbiote. They seek Spider-Man to go find Reed Richards, but in this case, it is the Ultimate Universe's Reed, who goes by the name The Maker, and he's also appearing in Future Foundation, so he's all over the place. And he made a contraption to use against Carnage. Back in the day, a group editor would say, "Hey, we're using Maker right now in our comics. So don't use him, because he's going to be in this event and he's going to be a major character." That doesn't happen so much anymore. They're kind of like letting Future Foundation run its course, and this is a mini event, so you really don't know in your head how it happens, but just enjoy the stories. They see. Okay, so. He made a contraption to use against Carnage. That's the Maker, and the Maker has his own evil agenda. I'm sure of it. Spider-Man and Eddie then head to Ravencroft. Ravencroft is a big asylum, played a big part in the Clone Saga, to protect Norman Osborn from Carnage. Carnage contaminates Red Goblin at the end of the issue. We then get into the 4 out of 5s, which means I really like them. We had Replacer number one. A kid loses his father to a deity demon as a stroke. So the kid sees the demon. Nobody else can see the demon. They think it's a stroke. The kid doesn't believe that. He really believes that it's a demon. Everyone knows it is stroke, but the kid knows otherwise. And that story is pretty creepy. I think when I read this, I was like amazed, because I had read it before, and I don't have any record of ever reading it. At least I remembered everything about it. I gotta let Harley out. We're getting snow tonight, or snow tomorrow, and Harley wants to take care of business before it gets too cold. But let's get back to the next one is House of X number two. Mora McTaggart. This was one of the ones that was labeled like a big issue. Like, a really important thing happens in this book that makes it worthwhile. And he marked like three issues in the whole series that you really need to read. She has a reincarnation power and lives many lifetimes, but destiny predicts she only has 11 lives. And it takes us through all of those 11 lives and how she plays a part in them, kind of at a really high level. It did have me go seek out the first appearance of Maura MacTaggert, and I do own that now. The next one above that is Powers of X, and usually it's inverted for me. I'll tell you right now, usually I enjoy House of X more than Powers of X because House of X starts in our current time period and moves forward. Powers of X goes in increments of 10, powers of 10. So you go like 10 years into the future, 100 years in the future, 1,000 years in the future, like that. Or you go in the past. P Professor X and Maura MacTaggert have an interesting conversation on a park bench. And then a Rasputin in the future, along with a descendant from Nightcrawler, steal an artifact from Nimrod. Nimrod captures a hound to get information. Every time I start to get into this segment, it switches, which really confused me. And it still does. I think the last Powers of X, I'm pretty caught up. I'm getting ready to read the finale of both stories. And the last Powers of X, I was understanding, like, I have a hard time when they jump really far in the future because my mind can't like grasp everything that's happened before and how things have changed and how the gap changed. But overall, I'm enjoying this series a lot more than the Carnage stuff. We then have Princess of Venus number one from American mythology. This is Edgar Rice Burroughs' story. The story opens up with a character called Zhangzhong, Princess Duar, watching combat training. She is learning off to the side, watching the instructors teach the class. She can't go to the class. The instructor sees this and asks her to leave because she's a princess. She shouldn't be watching how to fight like a warrior. Later, there is an invasion of the castle, and the princess is confronted by the constructor and vows to save her when in fact he is capturing her for ransom. That leads us through the Forbidden Forest, where Dwar uses the knowledge of beasts in the area to kill her captors. So she twisted it on him. The instructor is killed later by Dwar, using her training that he learned. She basically learned from him. Her father is contemplating giving up his kingdom for his daughter when she shows up at the castle and says, "Hey, I defeated our enemy." I really liked it. Really strong one shot by Pat Shand. Space Bandits, number one from Image Comics. One female is the leader of a group that robs the rich at a resort. She's betrayed by her gang and left for dead. The other woman is in love with her guy, and then she's wanted throughout the galaxy, and he turns her in and gets the reward money from that repeatedly, but then would free her after she's arrested. On the last mission, he decides to betray her. They both end up in prison mining stuff from the both women, by the way, not the guy that was manipulating the woman. But both women end up in a prison, and looks like they're gonna team up, because they're mining stuff from a dead space bug. From Aftershock, we have Dark Red 3 and 4. I've been enjoying this Aftershock series about vampires. It tells the story of Chip becoming a vampire in World War II by a little French girl as he was about to die. He kills the Nazi vampire recruiter and Stu and Cam. That cuts back to the future. So I gave you the origin of how he became a vampire, and then he kills the Nazi vampire recruiter Stu, And Cam finds out he is a vampire. Stu and Cam both find out he's a vampire. Let's see what else I wrote on that. He then goes to save Evie with Cam and Stu, and Evie is the woman that can give him blood transfusions, and she has that blood disorder which creates so many blood cells, so she actually has to give up her blood in order to live. You get some backstory on Stu wanting to become a priest but getting raped. That was weird. And then they go to rescue Evie, and the white supremacist vampire is feeding on her. Stu takes away a pregnant woman that was captured. Looks like Cam might have been fatally wounded. Stu and Cam are both kind of like guys that hang out at the quick stop, if you will. We then get in the Fantastic Four, Volume 1, number 136 and 137. With the defeat of Gideon, the Seeker finds the body of one of his henchmen and is able to make his dream a reality. Seems like the new reality is formed between generation differences of the 50s and 60s, where things went from very structured to groovy. The Fantastic Four deals with the Wild Ones and the Patriots. Human Torch and Medusa, brainwashed by the Wild Ones to find the brain and the Patriots to do the same thing to the Thing and Mr. Fantastic. They eventually come to their senses and defeat the Seeker, and things are restored back to reality. It's really a fun issue. We then get into Legion Lost, the first time I've ever read it, by the way, number 1 through 5. The series turned out, and around issue 5 and 6, it turned out into something that I was like, I could see why this is special now, once I got to the midpoint. An alien and her friends are going to get killed by the Progeny, who is a racist group of aliens that will kill anyone that is not their race. She hides in a floating destroyed outpost of the Legion, where she finds a hologram of Element Lad. She frees the Legionnaires that are there, and they stop to destroy the Progeny ship engines. When getting chased by the Progeny, they go to the aliens' world of Pacifist and find the sun that attracted them. And it, in reality, that sun is Wildfire's energy. How his suit is his containment suit, but he didn't have it. He was this energy. Brainiac 5.1 develops space jumping device, but space leeches are attracted to the energy and destroy it. The Shikari, who's the one woman that sort of starts this story, she's the alien woman that finds the Legion outpost, leads them to a floating rock that has progeny in it, and Brainiac finds it was a prison for the entity that is unstoppable. They were hoping to use the energy to find a way back home. Issue focuses on Brainiac as he is dealing with the problems, and he feels overwhelmed because he doesn't seem like he's solving the problems. We then get into the last 4 out of 5, which is Grim Fairy Tales 76 and 77. Sela is imprisoned for her attack at the school trying to rescue. So these were the issues that led up to that. They were better than the ones that followed. If it sounds like I'm talking out of order, it is because these earlier issues were a 4 out of 5. The later issues were a 3 out of 5. So Sela's in prison for her attack at a school trying to rescue her daughter from Venus. Her daughter did not want to leave Venus. She thinks Venus is her mother. She had an attorney, this is Sela, that wants to work with her to get her out, but Sela just wants to stay in prison. She's miserable because of what's happening with her daughter. There's a riot which Sela squashes with her powers, but manages to hide it. She gets involved in a skirmish where another prisoner wants to kill her for defending an inmate, and Sela kills her. We then get into the 5 out of 5s. Absolutely love these. From Image Comics, let me make sure. Image Comics, we got Sonata, and this is done in computer software drawn kind of stuff. I can't remember what it's called. Poser. This is on a world Perdita, where there are two races, the Ran and the Tyann. The Tyann decide to build a dam that would prevent resources from going to two races at the bottom, the Ran and the Lumani. And they try to negotiate, but it does not work out, and Ran decide to blow the dam, which may cause devastation to the villages. I really enjoyed it. Kind of like a post-apocalyptic space adventure in on another world. Second Coming, absolutely adored this. This is one of the books that I read, and I couldn't read anything afterwards because I just needed to absorb what I read, and I knew anything that I read afterwards would be a disappointment. Gives the story of God and Him creating Adam and Eve, and then just being disappointed with the human race in general for all the evil they brought. He's about to give up on them, and Jesus, his son, says, "Let me have a chance, Father. Let me rescue humanity from themselves." It shows Jesus then growing up and learning the carpenter trade and becoming best friends with Shimon. He then goes out as an adult to spread goodness and is crucified for it. So yeah, it's kind of like Jesus getting crucified on the cross. And his father, God, is infuriated with this. He's like, "You're a god, and you're letting these punks, these people I created, kill you." Later, there is an alien superhero, and he asks the hero to train him on punishing villains. Jesus wants no part of it, as he believes in the forgiveness and betterment of mankind. Here is a paragraph of some of the back matter. Whether people agree with Christ's assessment or not, whether they agree with my assessments of Christ or not, none of it really matters. The great problem confronting the world today will not solve by laying down more barbed wire or simply finding new ways to punish people harder than even before. The ability of armies, empires, and other great institutions of force to protect us dwindles by the day. If not Christ, then we need someone like him in our thought experiments to be the voice of other possibilities, other ways of fixing human civilization, for without the world is lost. And I just get chills reading that, but that's some of the stuff that's in the back matter. The back matter just blew me away. The story was well told. I love this book. It was just above and beyond anything that I had read in a long time. Let's get into the week of August 12th through August 18th. We'll start with the movies. That week, the 4 out of 5 movie went to the theater to watch The Good Boys. From the creators of, what was that movie that they created, Barb? Superbad. Thank you. I couldn't think of it. I know she would think of it. It was very funny. Really enjoyed the heck out of it. That was all the movies that week. This week, it seemed like I only read 15 comics. There were 5 Marvel, 1 Image, and 9 DC. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s, the ones that I liked. And yet you'll see an interesting trend here, and I don't know why that is yet. I haven't figured it out. I don't know if I'm breaking my mold of reading things and I'm not liking the stuff that I'm reading, trying to read weekly, because I'm doing an experiment with Absolute Carnage and the X-Men books in trying to read them weekly and keeping caught up. And I'm finding that I like them less. So I don't know if it's because of the material or because I'm not getting to be a mood reader anymore. And I think it's the later, not being a mood reader. But things have changed, and as you see in upcoming weeks, I find, and Hickman, I am real, it takes me a while to warm up to him. Like when he did FF, it took me a while. When he did Avengers, Avengers World, and the New Avengers, took me a while, but I got there eventually. It's just his style, but I know it'll pay off, and it's sort of doing that now. So at the 3 out of 5s, which means I just liked it, we have Absolute Carnage, Scream number 1, The Symbiote Resurrects the Dead, host of Donna Diego, being hunted by Patricia Robertson, the host leaves the dead Donna Diego behind and takes over Patricia's body, and that plays an important part in upcoming issues. We have Powers of X number 2. In the past, Professor X forms an alliance with Magneto. Then you cut to the present time, where Cyclops, Professor X, and Magneto decide they need to take down Nimrod with the data stolen by Mystique and crew. And it's weird because in the last issue they jump really forward and Nimrod's still there, so I guess that didn't pan out. Then cut to 100 years, where Wolverine, Apocalypse take the stolen device with their intent to take down Nimrod. The cut then cut 1,000 years into the future, and I don't know what the fuck is going on. There's factoids on different levels of the machine, going from human all the way to the phalanx, and that goes out throughout the whole story. And there's some history on Nimbus. Then we get into the four out of fives. We have Curse of Spawn number 12. This is the first full appearance of Jessica Priest, and she is rumored to, that she's going to take the place of Al Simmons. At least that's what I've heard. Jessica Priest was created to take the place in reality of Chapel in the film, and the reason that was is because Todd McFarlane didn't own Chapel. But when they were originally doing Image Comics, Chapel was part of his origin. Chapel was created by Rob Liefeld. They speculated that she will be the She-Spawn, like I just said. She is not a good person, as she killed her family as a little girl because they would not let her roast marshmallows. What kind of girl is that? Now she works for Jason Wynn, who was the big bad for a good portion of Spawn, and is used to create a war between the Middle East and Israel. She then goes to destroy a chemical plant and two scientists in the Amazon, but she is set up by those scientists because they were ready for her. That was Curse of Spawn number 12. We have Iron Man, the Iron Age number 1 and 2. These ones so the Curse of Spawn, I just randomly came across on Twitter and said, I should probably get. Iron Man, the Iron Age, I went back and started listening to old episodes of the Comic Book Attic, and Michael Pindell was talking about this series, and I said, "Man, this Kurt Busiek story, it sounds great, and it has Patrick Zurcher art, and I've always been a fan of his." So this is the history of Iron Man told through the eyes of Pepper Potts and Stark Industries. It's by Busiek and Zurcher, like I said. The second story continues from the first, and you learn the company trying to take over Stark International is what will become Roxxon. This story is told through the eyes of Happy Hogan, and it was pretty awesome. So you have two, it's a two-issue story that catches you up on Iron Man, and one is told through the eyes of Pepper Potts, and one is told through the eyes of Happy Hogan. Kind of a formula for Busiek because he kind of does that formula in Marvels. He kind of does that formula when he's on Astro City, and here he is doing it with Iron Man. So very interesting. We have Shazam 5 and 6. Freddy and Darla are in the Wildlands as they're going to be executed by the Tigers. Pedro and Eugene are in the Gamelands trying to beat the Game Master so they can leave the world. Billy frees Mary from the Kid King, and they escape because of a lightning incident when Black Adam is fighting Savannah. And that I don't know how that lightning incident went across to the worlds that they were in, but it did. Mr. Mind helping is helping Savannah. Billy and Mary are back on Earth, and CC shows up, that's Billy's father, and wants Billy to go with him to find his mother. Mary tells the foster parents about everything. This series has been pretty amazing, and this catches you up because there were, I think issue 7 just came out. So there's been some delays, and I don't understand the delays because the artists have switched, but I don't know if it's all on Jeff or what the delays are with him. Maybe he's writing too many scripts for TV or movies. Legion Lost 6 through 12. Livewire go this is amazing series. You really owe it to yourself to read Legion Lost if you want to be intro to Legionnaires. I think it's a good series. It's one of the seminal series that people remember, and I think you'll enjoy it. This is not volume 2 of Legion Lost either. This is the Abnett and Lanning, not the new 52 Legion Lost. Well, I did enjoy that though. Livewire goes. This is a 4 out of 5. So everything from Curse of Spawn up is 4 out of 5. Livewire goes from his monitor duty to, and Saturn Girl took his spot. He wants to know where their relationship is, but she's worried about Umbra, who's really Shadowlast. They all have different names at this point. Starts to read her mind and help her, and all hell breaks loose. Umbra takes out Quantum Kid and Wildfire and escapes the ship. Saturn Girl's injured, so Livewire has to take the leadership role. It turns out that Saturn Girl unleashed a creature with part of Umbra. The Legion had to reunite the entity. Ultra Boy and Monstress fought the Singularity on one of the planets trying to rescue Umbra. Four more members of Legion show up. This is important to help Element Lad, Leviathan, Spark, and Cosmic Boy. Turns out that Saturn Girl brought them back with her mind, and they were not real, as well as Apparition, so Phantom Girl. She is singled out from the group, and leadership goes back to Livewire, who doesn't really want to be a leader. Ultra Boy is devastated, but makes peace with Saturn Girl because his woman is Phantom Lady, or what is she going by now? Apparition. So that's what he's essentially forgiving her for, is manipulating him. But there is a kiss between Saturn Girl and Ultra Boy. That's one of the things you'll learn about Legion. There's a lot of romance and twists and turns going on. Then the Progeny come to destroy the Legion, and we find their leader is Element Lad, who has become a god in this world. He kind of reminded me in tone of Star Trek V when you had Spock's brother sort of being a god. They embrace things, but then it looks like he created the Progeny to erase his mistakes. The Legion forms a plan to take him out and have to use the Omniphagos to fight with Element Lad. This is like an invulnerable creature. Element Lad erases Monstrous, and Livewire returns his ring, makes the ultimate sacrifice to keep Element Lad from entering their universe. The rest of the Legion are back in their own universe? I don't know. To be continued in Legion Worlds. Haven't read it yet. 5 out of 5, Weird Wonder Tales. This is a Dr. Druid story. He went by Dr. Droom before this. This is where they decided to change his name to Dr. Druid because Dr. Droom sounded too much like Dr. Doom. And essentially, it was Stan Lee forgetting about Dr. Droom before he created Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom. So, excellent reprint. Reprints Amazing Adventures number 1, which is the first appearance of Dr. Droom, and here they called him Dr. Druid. It reprints Tales to Astonish number 13, which is the first appearance of Groot, and a story called The Hypnotist from Amazing Tales number 47. The Hypnotist is about a scrawny dude that fears his own shadow. He goes to a hypnotist to gain confidence. The hypnotist realizes he is a great boxer when hypnotized, and he becomes a champion, a championship boxer. The hypnotist wants to become rich, so he betrays the boxer by setting him up and then taking him out of the hypnotist, thinking he's going to lose the boxing match. but the boxer turned against him and he actually won the fight. And now the hypnotist that was his promoter is broke. Really good story. Loved it. Good stuff. We're going to get into the final week now. This is 8:19 to 8:25, and we'll start at the bottom. The movies watched that week was at the theater, Ready or Not. If you haven't heard about this series, I'm not going to totally give it away, but the premise of it is about a girl that marries into this family, and they're one of her situations is she spends the night in their house and she has to perform a game. And they don't know what that game is going to be, so she has to pretty much roll the dice and find out what the game is going to be. Well, it turns out to be hide and seek, and it's a deadly game of hide and seek. Like, she drew the bad straw because hide and seek is the bad game to play, and it gets all sorts of crazy. Really good movie, and before I saw the previews, I thought Margot Robbie was in it, but it's not Margot Robbie. So, excellent film, 4 out of 5. Comics that week we had total of 19, 13 Marvel. There's been a lot of Marvel lately because I've been on a Marvel kick, and I've been trying to keep caught up on Marvel. Not all Marvel, just what I started. We have 13 Marvel, 1 Madison, 1 Kickstarter, 1 Image, and 3 DC. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s. We had the Punisher annual. This was Punisher and J. Jonah Jameson taking on some Russians as they try and steal the space shuttle. They end up having to fight the Brood in space. It was all right. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was fantastic or anything, but it was all right. So far with the Acts of Vengeance ones that I've read, the annuals, I liked Wolverine the most. And I've read three of them: Ghost Spider Annual, this one, and the Wolverine one. And I really enjoyed the Wolverine one. And there's still like the Moon Knight one and She-Hulk one that I bought that I need to read. We got Pretty Violent from Image Comics. This is one I didn't plan on buying. It's a new hero raised by villains makes her debut, and she has such a temper that she takes out the good guys. And it's done in a cartoon style atmosphere and art style. And I was sort of on the fence with this one, and I wasn't planning on buying it, so I decided not to continue it. It's not that there's something wrong with it. It just kind of reminded me of like the style of I Hate Fairyland. And I kind of finished that one, so I guess I didn't feel a need to continue with this one. But it's a good story, and I know Ronnie Barron's really enjoying it, and there's some other people I know that are really enjoying it. Fantastic Four Volume 3. This is the Claremont run. And this is number 20. I found this in a dollar bin. And I actually completed Volume 3 now. So I have a full run of Fantastic Four Volume 3, which I never had before. So I think I owned just a few issues of the Mark Waid run in this volume. And I filled it in. And it is wordy. Claremont's a wordy dude. It'll take you a long time to read one of these FFs. And the Fantastic Four take on the Ruin in Paris. Back at the warehouse, Franklin was de-aged and Valeria is much older. And then they are attacked. We then get Ghost Spider number one. This is Spider-Gwen. With Spider-Gwen's identity revealed to her world, she decides to go to college in the 616 and be Ghost Spider in her own universe. At the end, the Jackal looks to have taken a spider from her to clone. So that's a spider from Gwen.
And then we get into the 4 out of 5s. We have Absolute Carnage versus Deadpool. I have been enjoying Deadpool, which is really weird. I'm even starting to get the new number one coming in a couple months. Mostly, I've been enjoying Gwenpool, but it's leading me to this. This is Deadpool is teaming up with Spider-Man as he convinces Deadpool to go to Ravencroft and hang with John Jameson, Man-Wolf. Then Carnage attacks Ravencroft, which kind of ties into the timing that we talked in the previous episode of Absolute Carnage, and he gets control of Man-Wolf. Deadpool burns the whole Ravencroft fighting the symbiotes with two microwaves. And then we get a Future Foundation. Really, really above and beyond my expectations on this one. The new team is working to uncover and rescue Reed Richards. They think it's the real Reed Richards, but it's the Maker, which is appearing in the Absolute Carnage series as well, in a space prison. And it just gets all kinds of crazy, and it's a lot of fun. And issue 2 was even better. Agents of Atlas number 1. This is the. This is the new Agents of Atlas number 1. I should have put that in there. It's not the Agents of Atlas, it's the new Agents of Atlas. Establishes the new team led by Amadeus Cho. What this is it's kind of like an all-Asian team, which includes Silk, Luna Snow, Wave, Swordmaster, Crescent, and Arrow, with the protector of Pan as they fight a dragon. The big Nguyen company is reuniting various parts of the world in one location without their permission, kind of like in this like merged utopia. The second story has the original Agents of Atlas taking on the General. I wish they would keep up with that. I really enjoyed it. 4 out of 5. Titans Burning Rage. This is the Walmart story. 4 out of 5. The Titans fight the Disruptor as he steals a Star's amplifier to amplify his own powers, which simply disrupt superpowers. That's his superpower, to sort of disrupt everyone else's superpower. And now he's even more powerful. He is working for the Hive, so is one of the scientists from Star Labs. Hive recruits the Fearsome Five to kill the Titans. And then we get in a Star Wars Age of Resistance special. It's a cool story of Maz. Maz is the creature with big eyes that I think showed up in the first Return Star Wars movie with Rey. As Rey went to get, I think that's where she got her lightsaber, if I remember correctly. What was that? I hope it's the chair, but that didn't sound good. No? It just sounded like something hit the house. I don't see anything. I know, I didn't see anything. I looked out there. Sorry about that. Okay, this is the story of Maz as she teams up with Solo and Chewbacca, and then a story of one of the first Amlan Hondo and one of her first successes with the rebellion. She's the woman that took over for Leia in that one movie when Leia was believed to be dead. A short BB-8 story on how he gets many Empire droids to betray the Empire. So there were three stories in this little special, and it was pretty fun. Deathstroke the Terminator number 1. This is the volume 1 that came right out of Wolfman and Perez's Titans. And this is by Wolfman, and I can't remember the artist. Zek? Don't remember. Gives the backstory of Wade Wilson and his family as his wife Adeline is left for dead. Wade has to figure out who's trying to kill him. Is it the new Ravager? Because his son was Ravager before that. Ravager died in Teen Titans number 2, I think. New Teen Titans number 2. The next one is a Kickstarter. It's called The Naked Eye. It's a person with the ability to frame bad guys with his power to become invisible. So he's like takes pictures of them. He goes undercover, does that kind of thing. Later, he takes on a powerful company that is torturing animals with his friend. And they sort of do take out the company, but there's a little cliffhanger at the end. We'll see what happens if there's a new Kickstarter with The Naked Eye number 2. I have to keep my eye out because I like that one. Black Atlas number 1. This is from a company I learned from Mike Pindell of the Comic Book Attic from Madison. It's kind of like a cult classic, even though there's only like 6 total issues from this publication. Black Atlas is one of them. I found it on eBay. It's the first story about a wholesome hero who goes back home. It's very religious. This writer is very religious. There's some interesting back matter about... God, I can't remember who it was. It was the creator of Black Lightning. I'm losing my mind here. Tony Isabella not liking his work, something in like in a comic book story. Or one of the fanzines. What's wrong?
I was trying to see what it was.
You didn't see nothing. Sorry. I lost track of thought. But the second story is a sci-fi story about a ship that can travel incredible speeds and is attacked from no reason by another ship. And then the last story is about a guy that is getting he's getting by, and he inherits a hotel and is great at being a hotel host. And he pretty much has to protect a woman who's displaying her very expensive jewels, and they're stolen. He basically tells her not to take out her jewels, but she's trying to impress some person that's on the ship. And so he asks, I mean, not on the ship, but in the hotel. And it turns out it's like a mystery on, you know, who's stealing these jewels. But it was 3 stories, and it was a lot of fun. We then have Gwenpool Strikes Back. This is a 4 out of 5. This gets even better with issue 2. I think I gave it a 5 out of 5. I'm really enjoying this character, which is not like me to like this shit, but I do. She stages a robbery to attract Spider-Man and try to steal his spider powers. That does not work, as Spider-Man does not want to bite her. She thinks if he bites her that she's going to get these spider powers. She's concerned on how to exist in the 616 without any powers, because you got to remember her power is being from our world, which is somebody who just reads all these comics and knows about the characters. Yeah, she's athletic and she's, you know, she could do some sword play, but she's concerned. We have Arrow number 1. This is another Asian superhero, which we talked about in the new Agents of Atlas. She has the power of the winds and has to destroy several skyscrapers. Very manga-esque. She recently architected these buildings, and now these skyscrapers are coming alive and turning into monsters, and she has to destroy her own creations. The second story is she teams up with Wave to defeat another character. We got a Web of Venom, a funeral pyre, and this is a tie-in to the it's probably the highest one of the highest rated Carnage books I've given. This focuses on Andy Benton and is a prequel to the Scream series. The art by Joshua Cassara and Alberto Albuquerque is amazing. Carnage is after Andy, and she has to fight them off with her magic. And she actually had a symbiote attached to her at one point. Now she's kind of uses magic spells. She's got a pentagram on her, and Carnage is obviously after her.
We then get into another Asian Marvel character, Sword Master. A new character inherits a sword from his father to become a hero. He is being trained by Shang-Chi. He meets with three criminals and tricks them into telling him where he can try to find his father. It looks like he's going to have to run, have a run-in with Ares, you know, the god of Ares. We then get into the 5 out of 5s. Marvel's epilogue. This was a Kurt Busiek, Alex Ross epilogue. The main photographer is out with his two daughters when the X-Men have to take on the Sentinels around X-Men 98. So it ties very much in X-Men 98 and also Nova. And it's just incredible how it does it. And then it tells you, it has back matter that tells you a lot about where all this material came from and the inspiration for this. It was a lot of fun. We have Jane Foster, Valkyrie number one. She fights Blue Streak and his team of rollerbladers. She visits Broomhilde in Valhalla. She is trying to reestablish herself as a doctor as well, but she's being punished as she has to work in a morgue as an assistant. Gives some of her new powers, such as the vision to see things, and her new weapon, Underjarn, which is a is an all weapon. It could turn into anything. It has the death of Heimdall, the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge, by Bullseye, and that story continues on. We have History of the Marvel Universe number one. I loved it. Concentrates on the beginning of the Marvel Universe, which is my weakness, as told by Galactus. There's a lot of celestials, internals, space deities, and gods. The back part gives references to which the issues of the comic books and the material was pulled from. And it was just an amazing type of read. And I enjoyed it, I think, a lot more than I'll enjoy the issues after, because I already know that stuff. This is some of the stuff I don't know, so which I thought was more interesting. We have a Tom King book as the top 5 out of 5. I cried during this one, but I'm not ashamed to say it. Superman has to fight Mido, and Mido really wins. It's in a boxing ring, but Superman outlasts him. And what Mido realizes is that no matter how hard I fight, no matter how much I'm winning, Superman will just never give up. So it's kind of like a bunch of one-shot stories with an overarching theme of he's trying to rescue a girl that was kidnapped by Rannian Zeta Beam. And what it is seeing Superman through the eyes of other characters, in this case, Mido. The second story is where I just started bawling. We then find after his bout with Mido, he's kind of like floating in space and he's really injured. And he's near death, but there's a healer on a ship. And, you know, he tries to heal him and he can't. And he has this like what do you call it when you can read minds? Telekinesis? Not. I can't like think of what it is. But, he could see like Superman's life through while he's trying to have these healing sessions, and he just is amazed of what how many lives Superman has saved. And this guy has a family and everything, and he loves his family. He's got kids. He's got a loving wife. He basically has to sacrifice himself with his healing abilities to save Superman's life, because it's kind of like one of those things, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And yeah, I tear up just talking about it, but it was so damn impressive because this guy, he had everything, you know, he had a loving family and he gave everything up because he realized without a world without Superman, what that would be. And he used all his healing power, and it killed him. But he brought back Superman, and it was phenomenal. I absolutely loved it. I adored it. Series has been knocking me off my socks off. It's so good. So that was a total of 19. So we'll just summarize the 5 out of 5s. We have Marvel's Epilogue number 1, Jane Foster Valkyrie number 1, History of the Marvel Universe number 1, Superman Up in the Sky number 2. Going back to the previous week, we had Weird Wonder Tales number 9, was a 5 out of 5. And the week before that, Second Coming, one of my favorite comics of the year, if not decade, and Sonata number 1. And that wraps up this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm also going to include a clip that I submit to another podcast. It's called John Mayo's Preview Spotlight, Comic Book Page Preview Spotlight. And what this is you get your previews and you can go on the forum and you could say, you know, I'm going to do a couple of clips. And what John does is he takes the whole previews magazine and the Marvel and DC supplement and puts together an episode with people's submissions about what people are excited about. So if you're into like positivity, this is a good podcast to listen to because it's people trying to sell you on a comic. Well, this month's preview spotlight that I picked was the Mike Grell Omnibus, and I talked about it for 20 minutes. I was very passionate about it, and I'm going to just attach it to here so you can read it. But I encourage you to go to Comic Book Page and check it out. And if you like the previous clip, there's the weekly spotlight, and there's the Mayo Report if you're into comic book sales on comics and trades. I like to listen to the Mayo Report. So those are the podcasts I always listen to. And you can contribute if you so wish to. Me and Kirk Spencer did a clip last month for the War Giant coming from DC Comics. We had a lot of fun with that. So you kind of just see what these preview things are, what's coming out, what people are excited about. And you can submit clips as well. So check that out. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch if you have any questions on anything or comments. That's the best place to reach me. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can reach me on the website at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And you can reach me at Facebook. You type in Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button, follow all the episode threads there. I want to thank you for listening and enjoy your comics. As Mike Pindell says, I'm going to steal that line because I think it's important. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Hello, this is Mike Myers from the Geek Brunch Podcast, the Geek Brunch Retro Podcast, Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, and DC Spotlight, and soon to be the DCW4 podcast. And my pick this week is in DC. It's on page, I wish I could see better. I have to always lift up my glasses because I'm old. Page 93 of the DC supplement. It is Green Arrow by Mike Grell Omnibus, Volume 1. Mike Grell has been a huge impact on me. He's like probably in my top 5 creators of all time. I adore his work. I have commissions of him. I have 3 commissions. I have him do a Warlord. I had him do Shakara. She's a character in Warlord that can turn into a cat. And a Russian supporting cast named Mariah. So I have 3 of them over the course of, I don't know, a few years. Every time I see him at a con, I try to get a commission. I would like to get one from John Sable because it's also a creation. What is he known for? He's known for his earliest work has been Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. And Green Arrow, he's known for that. He had a long run on Green Arrow, whether it be writing and art. He's a writer and artist creator. He doesn't always do the art chores in all the books, but he does, it usually kicks it off. He's known for Green Arrow Longbow Hunters. That's what led into this series. He's known for Shaman's Tears from Image Comics. What else does he have on his list? John Sable, of course. I talked about that. He has James Bond I believe from Eclipse. I have all his works. I just adore him. I just recently acquired the James Bond because I didn't know about it until recently. Warlord is one of my favorite comics. Green Arrow is, to me, is the run of Green Arrow. That's like the Green Arrow that I know. That's the era of the Green Arrow. And in that time frame when Green Arrow started with Mike Longbow Hunters, it was like 1987, a huge year for me. I don't want to go into where I was because then you'll know where I was, but it was sort of between high school and college, so it was kind of like a big deal. And during this time, they were experimenting with these square-bound books, like whether it be the Adam Strange 4-issue mini. Maybe it's 3 issues. It was amazing. Hawk World by Tim Truman. Dark Knight Returns. Green Arrow, Longbow Hunters. They were trying to appeal to a little bit of a darker sensibility. And this is what kicked it off, is Green Arrow, Longbow Hunters. I think he did a lot with the character. And he had a long-running run. I know it lasted to like 100 issues, 'cause I remember, I think in issue 100 is where he died. And he sacrificed himself. Superman was there to save him, but if he like let go of the bomb which his hand was in, it would blow up. And he was pretty insistent that he just let himself die. And the run lasted. Mike Grell's run lasted, wow, it lasted all the way to issues like 78. And then we had other creators take over, like Kevin Dooley, Chuck Dixon. Mike Grell came back. No, he didn't come back. He came back to the character later, but not in this form. And he started drawing covers for New 52, Green Arrow. But this run had 137 issues, one million issue. It had let's see, 7 annuals. It was a pretty long run, and that's what I know. It was the first run that was spawned out of Green Arrow Longbow Hunters, which I recently reread. And then the second series, you sort of get Kevin Smith and Phil Hester, so that's a good series. And then you have a little third series, which was continued from Green Arrow Black Canary. So it was really called Green Arrow Black Canary that came out. And then the fourth series was around Brightest Day. That was J.T. Krull and Diogenes Neves. I don't know how to pronounce that name. And then the fifth series was Judd Winnick and Ann Nesenti and Jeff Lemire. That was New 52, J.T. Krull. The sixth series is The Rebirth, which ran fairly long but canceled itself out pretty soon, but lasted 50 issues. So he's had a run, and even after that, he had a mini series prior to that from 1983. It was by Mike W. Barr and Trevor Von Eden. That was 4 issues. But Green Arrow's always appealed to me. When I was first introduced to him, it was the satellite era where you had Adam, you had Superman, Batman, Hawkman, Green Arrow, Black Canary, Wonder Woman, Firestorm. I mean, it was the satellite era had a lot of major characters, and it was awesome. And I've always loved his personality. He tends to fight for the people, like that's what his belief is. And he'd always get in quarrels with Hawkman, and his best friend was Hal, which was more along the lines of his personality is more like a space police, like Hawkman, you know, a Thanagarian, which they didn't always see eye to eye and politically. And you see that in DC Decisions when DC decided to show like who would vote for what. I can't remember what time or what election that came out, but it had to be in the Bush era and probably the Clinton era that DC Decisions came out. I've always like attached myself, and one of the when I was very young, one of the Christmas is what did I want for Christmas? I was into Mego dolls, and I didn't expect to get these, but because we didn't have a lot of money when I was a kid growing up. But my dad managed to have a Christmas club, and what a Christmas club was is you'd put money throughout the year, and at that time you'd earn interest. And obviously they'd invest your money elsewhere, but you'd earn like a small percentage of interest in it. And my dad, well, actually I'll just say Santa Claus came, and the Santa list was generated from either a Sears catalog. But this one year, I had a comic book, and it was called Heroes World. And Heroes World had a lot of art drawn by Joe Kubert and students from the Joe Kubert school. And they didn't, the Mego dolls were all drawn in, and I saw that they had Green Arrow, and I was blown away. And as a young kid, I circled like all the Mego dolls, and I was like circling the obscure. I wanted Green Arrow. I wanted Thor. I already had Spider-Man, Batman, Hulk. I wanted the characters. I wanted Falcon. I circled the Green Arrow car that came with an arrow that shot out of the front of the car. So I still own those today because I'm a hoarder. If those of you that know me, I couldn't throw and I took care of all my toys. But one of my favorite toys in that Mego era, which I think came after the Big Jim's pack. That was another thing I collected, which also had an Archer in it, and Whiplash, and it was very like superhero based, except these dolls you could like flex the muscles, and they had all these accessories like a Corvette where the lasers would flip over, or a camper that had a motorcycle with that looked like a wolf that would come out. But I grew up in an era where there were dolls. There was the G.I. Joe doll. There was the $6 Million Man doll. They weren't action figures. They were dolls. And these Mego dolls, that one of my favorite characters was the Green Arrow, and I still have him to this day. And the only thing that's wrong with him is the plastic belt that he had going around his waist had snapped. So it's just hanging there, like dangling there. But other than that, his costume's good, everything is great. And I used to always love his like beard. That would curl at the end. And I loved his girlfriend. I loved Black Canary. So I always thought they did well together. So he would make me so mad because he's kind of a womanizer and he has everything in front of him and he abuses it. And he had Connor Hawk, he has a son, and all kinds of other lineages. But I adore this character, and he makes good beans. I would love to try Ollie's beans. They've made a successful Warner Brothers TV show that I've kept up with. I'm all caught up on Green Arrow. And he started off in Smallville, wasn't really a big Smallville fan, but when they started introducing other characters, I sort of latched on and I liked the guy who played Green Arrow. He eventually showed up and played Aquaman, which was really weird, in an Aquaman pilot, which you could see, I believe it was on the DC Universe app. I know I bought it on iTunes. I wish they would do that with that Wonder Woman pilot that never aired so I could own it. Sorry, I had to take a drink. I like to walk around and talk. But that's my pick. And it does collect Green Arrow Longbow Hunters 1 through 3. That was what the Adam Strange one was, too, is 3 issues. And highly recommend that one as well. It is crazy, pertinent. It reads so well today. It's so good. That Sardath is crazy. Green Arrow 1 through 50, Secret Origins 38, and has an introduction by Mike Grell, and afterward by the series by Mike Gold. Also, I would highly recommend that if you see him at a con, you talk to him. And if you can talk to him, you can go to a panel, and you'll see that when they optioned off, they actually he actually got like John Sable optioned off, and they made a series. I don't remember how many episodes there were. I would love to catch them. And you know who wanted to play him really, really bad is Gene Simmons of Kiss. And one thing that's amazing, like if you could catch some of these older creators, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Mike Grell, Jim Shooter, any of these creators, they could tell stories. Like their stories at a panel, they'll just like blow you away, and you'll get sucked in, and you're like, oh my God, there's just so much history, and there's so many stories, and they're so worthwhile catching these stories. But yes, pick up Mike Grell, Green Arrow, Omnibus Volume 1. On the DC supplement, it's marked for $150, but it's 1,500 pages. You're paying $1 a page, but it's worth every penny. And if you keep doing it, they might come out with a volume, another volume, but I don't know if it'll be called Mike Grell. Maybe it'll just be called, because a lot of the past 50 is somebody else. Like he gets to 70, so they could do another 20 issues. They could do a small hardcover. God, I would love if they did the Warlord like this. Oh my God, or John Sable. I would adore it. But the thing that it's amazing is, I have been able to have every single Green Arrow comic book that's been published, except for the Golden Age, and I do own that. And that's my dog Harlequin, by the way. And there's nothing I could do about that squeaking noise. That's because my dog likes to grab a toy and then eat. And when she grabs a toy, she squeezes it, and then she throws her dish over, and then she eats all her food, just like Harlequin would. That's why we named her that. But yeah, this is an amazing book, and I hope that more people get them, because if they do this kind of thing and it's well received, then we'll get more collected editions like this. And yeah, I just love the character, and I own all his minis. I own all his comics. The only thing I'll never own probably is the Golden Age stuff, but I do own it in that Golden Age Green Arrow Omnibus. So he's one of the characters that I just adore, and I've never stopped collecting him. As soon as I hit that Green Arrow mini, that 4-issue mini series, and then Longbow Hunters, I have always bought Green Arrow. Like there was no, if Green Arrow comic came out, I was getting it. And there's been ups and downs, but I don't care. I love the history. I love the characters. I love comics. And I want to know the good. I want to know the bad. I want to know the everything. I want to know everything about this character. Just like I want to know everything. I want to read every comic book that's ever published if possible. That's not going to happen unless I'm reincarnated. But yes, Green Arrow, I'll hand this back over to John. Thanks for listening to my banter, and we'll talk to you next month. Bye.